Hello and welcome to Tuesdays at APA, our monthly after-hours lecture series held at APA's Burnham Conference Center. My name is David Morley. I'm a research associate at APA and host of Tuesdays at APA. Information on previous and future presentations is available on APA's website, www.planning.org, under the section called Events. Selected past programs are also available as podcasts, and you can see the APA website for additional details. Tonight we have with us John Schuler, an associate professor and bibliographer of urban planning at the University of Illinois, Chicago, and Rana Salzman, who is APA's librarian and education associate. John teaches and writes about government information resources and policies, as well as the literature of urban planning and public administration. Rana has a background in electronic resources administration, technology instruction, and information management. Since the late 1990s, planners have grown to rely on the rapid exchange of information and enhanced data analysis tools enabled by sophisticated computing power. With this proliferation of information and technology, planners need practical strategies for making sense of electronic information. John and Rana are here tonight to discuss how to use the web to find relevant planning information efficiently and to comment on how the Internet's reach has changed the practice of planning through the expansion of digital government services. Please join me in welcoming John Schuler and Rana Salzman.
Thank you, David. Good evening, everyone. You're going to have two librarians talking to you tonight about how to use the web effectively. And just so I can get a diagnostic on the demographics in the room, how many of you use Google all the time? Excellent. You've drank the Kool-Aid. Now, what we're going to show you is give you an idea, techniques, approaches of what Google doesn't do for you. In a sense, what Google has given you is an illusion. By using the Google algorithm, they give you the impression that you can find anything if you put into two words, any two words, right? Well, they give you an illusion. Some of you are shaking your head. You already believe in the illusion or you don't. But they give you the illusion that if you plug in the right keywords, you're going to find what you want. What librarians have known for centuries is that finding information relies not only on keywords, but on certain techniques. And this, I suppose, is what we refer to as the data mining. So we're not going to show you an algorithm to compete with Google. We're going to show you how to use Google with other techniques to be more effective. In addition, we're going to remind you why librarians have been around for 5,000 years. And we consider ourselves to be the oldest profession known to humankind. And I would ask you, do you know what the second oldest profession is? Urban planning. Now, usually that gets a few laughs. I guess with this audience, it may be too close to home. So, what we've done is we put together a few slides, and I also must insist that neither Rana and I are great believers in the PowerPoint. We believe the PowerPoint corrupts. We believe that power corrupts, but PowerPoint corrupts absolutely. So we try to minimize our use of it and just use it to guide our talk. So for my part of the program, I'm going to walk you through our government. And how do you use the government website? Somebody tell me what government websites, federal government websites, you use on a regular basis. A volunteer for the audience, please. Sir. Okay, Bureau of Labor Statistics and the Census Bureau. Who else? What else? Bureau of Transportation. Can't imagine what you might be planning. What else?
Housing, HUD.
Okay. And you're very familiar with those web pages? Do you feel like you're missing something? Or do you find a place that you go to all the time? Yeah? Anybody else?
Oh,
the locals. Yes, well, we won't be dwelling. Well, we will dwell on the locals for a while, but for my part, I'm going to talk about the feds. There are over I won't say how many federal web pages there are, but right now the number of websites are numbering anywhere between 50 and 80,000 since the birth of the web. And that alone should cause you some caution before trying to search for information overall. And when I talk to urban planning students, I sort of try to get their minds back, not so much focusing on techniques, but rather thinking about our government in a productive way, which can be done, by the way. So what I talk to them about, and I rip this off from the intelligence agencies, is discovery, organization, and knowledge. And by some imaginations, Google's already taken care of the discovery part. Google is, in fact, some in our profession have already surrendered that to Google and have called it the next public library for the world, or some such thing. But to understand federal government effectively, you've also got to understand its organization. And in this case, I speak to you, I ask you to go back in your memory to your civics class and how the government is structured. And that's what I pull a lot of my teaching techniques from, because what it is if you understand how the government works, you can understand where you can find the information. It's that simple. And then finally, knowledge. Knowledge assumes you know what to do with what you found and make a difference with it. So my three simple paths will hopefully lead you to enlightenment if you know how to use it, and you know how to use it for good rather than evil. Discovery. Your first thing you've got to understand about our government, as you may already discover, is it doesn't say anything of value. Now, come on. There's got to be some government workers in here. Aren't you going to rise up with the pitchforks, huh? The torches, and say, "Down with you, monster!" To the citizens, to those that aren't familiar with government, what they see is often a matter of what they see referred to by other information sources. A podcast, an article, or if they're so old-fashioned enough to read a newspaper article. And what I tell urban planning students is you never assume that you're going to find what you are looking for in one document. And very often what you find, what you're looking for, is scattered all across these types of documents. And what you have to do at the end of the day in your path of discovery in order to build on that knowledge is knit these sources together. And there are some specific tools that the government has put out that will enable you to do that. The government is chock full of proposals. Everybody is floating an idea somewhere, somehow, saying this is going to be the next great thing. Proposals often lead to legislation. Legislation might, if it's passed into law, create rules and regulations, and then implementation of those rules and regulations. Generating money generates information. The TARP funds being a perfect example. How are we spending the TARP funds? How are we spending the economic recovery funds? The government attempted to put up a website that described how the money was spent. How successful was that in your estimation? Did the government make it clear to the public how it was spending its money? There might have been some issues with that, interpreting on what exactly happened. And finally, an area you're probably really familiar with, the data and information, census, Bureau of Labor Statistics, transportation data. And a lot of this data is generated because there's an exchange of money between the local, state, and federal governments. And in order for the federal government to know if its money is being spent properly, these other governments must report back to it and say, what have you done with these federal funds? Sometimes in that relationship, they do make it easy to understand how the money was spent and what it was spent on, and produce better information sources. Now, in this case, the first one I'm going to suggest to you that is better than Google in terms of finding federal information is this one, USA.gov. How many of you use this web page? Ha! Can I tell you how many millions of dollars have been invested in this web page? And every time I ask that question of the room full of people, I get the same answer? So one of you have you. Good. You are an expensive citizen. What this is the federal government's answer to Google. And the difference between this search engine, USA.gov, it's real easy to remember, and Google is simply they use a different algorithm. And they only search government websites. What I like about USA.gov is that it searches not only federal government web servers, but it also searches state and local transportation. So since I've been suggested that somebody does transportation, and what do you want to do about transportation? It's your topic. You give me something.
Freight.
All right. Who would have ever imagined that? Freight. I can spell that right? No? Yes? No? Let's see what happens. That was the audience participation part of the show. What you see here is USA.gov then organizes it according to topics, agencies, and sources. So if you click on these tabs, it will then break down based on where they found it. If you click on this, it's simply listed in a Google-like fashion. I find these two tabs much more useful than Google's results in a way because of the way it organizes the knowledge. Now, if you look at the number of, they actually give you a choice, but if you look at the websites, you will see that in some cases they are the Bureau of Transportation Statistics. In other places, they're local governments. You've already gone beyond Google's strengths in many ways because this eliminates all non-government sources that are identified by USA.gov. Now, some non-government sources creep in here. The algorithm is not perfect. But in terms of saving you time and understanding the federal government as well as the other governments, this search engine is a much better. And it really helps to know how to spell, yes. So if we go down here, now this is the other thing where I talk about the different types of documents and sources of information. If you click down here on this one, agency, Congressional Budget Office. You would never imagine that an agency called the Congressional Budget Office would have anything to say about transportation subsidies or statistics. But the thing about the federal government, as I said in its complexity, is that government agencies are in each other's pockets all the time, producing information, producing data, that unless you're very familiar with the structure of government, you will never discover, except perhaps through this type of search engine. Now, are you going to tell me you're going to use this in the future? Wait, I'll do my Billy Mays. There's more. If we go back. Now, Google's no slouch. They know the government is not sleeping necessarily, but it certainly lacks Google's resources. Google has answered this, I say, with something they call, with something they call, let's go there directly. Google Uncle Sam. Now, it used to be this was simply Google Uncle Sam, and there were no other relationships. But here, they actually enable you to search at the local and state level as well. I think this was in direct competition, realizing they were missing something when they saw what USA.gov was doing. So if we were to do transportation again, and what the heck, let's do studies this time because I can spell it better. No. Again, what you've got is a simple Google list. How many of you use Google Uncle Sam? Ha! Pilgrims. You are now two steps ahead of Google. This is the danger of just relying on Google. And we haven't even added the librarians yet. Okay? So Google is useful if you live a simple life. Now, some of these others represent other ways of finding information. One I'm going to refer to, I'm going to go with this one, GPO access. Because GPO, Government Printing Office, yes, there is such a thing. And they're actually responsible for not just printing the documents, but also organizing and keeping a good amount of information in order on behalf of the government. The problem might be for many people is that many of the products, information products it is responsible for, cannot be found by other search engines. You really have to go to this webpage to find it. So, for instance, if we type in transportation, and let's do legislation this time, in this simple search box, you get this. And what you get is a list of relevant documents, some of which you can get online. Others might be old enough that it hasn't made to the great digital future yet. Okay? So, if I were to stop here, you have three search engines, GPO Access, Uncle Sam, and USA.gov, that gives you a better handle on what the federal government is doing. But it is driven not by algorithms, but by your own choices of keywords. There is something else I need to say to you. How many of you know about Boolean logic? Good. Why don't you describe to me what Boolean logic is?
Basically, it's using and not, and that sort of thing to include
or. Okay. How many of you use... What Boolean logic does is it creates sets of results. If you use the word and, you're going to get a smaller set of results. If you use the word or, you're going to basically get the universe of those two search terms. So, or not. I was going to get to not. But not tells the algorithm, don't use that word. Now, what a lot of Google searchers don't understand is that Google expects you to understand and use Boolean logic to improve your search terms. So, if we were to go back to USA.gov and we were to put, if we were to do transportation studies and leave it without quotes, quotes around transportation studies is essentially telling the machine, I want those two words to occur together. By leaving it off out of the quotes, you're telling it, I want everything that gives me transportation and or, excuse me, transportation or studies, regardless of where they occur. So if we did this search, we come up with 4,250,000 hits. This is the other third problem with Google as used by most humans. They think that the number of hits they get, that is what they are burdened with. They have to go through, after talking to students for 25 years, I understand humans, okay? They'll just take what is on the first page. But if we go back and we put these two words in quotes, very simple. And we do search. Let's see what happens to the total. Ah. All right, you bloody machine. We'll do it this way. Sometimes, you know, just when you think you got it figured out, ta-da. So being able to look at Google and understanding and these other search engines and understanding how to use Boolean logic. Bingo. Okay. Any questions? All right, let's move from discovery to organization. Now, this is always the most difficult part of my talk because I talk as if the agencies get along with each other, and they don't. The agencies are at war with each other, not only over many things like politics and power and money, but they're also in terms of the subjects and how they divide things up. So if you look at how transportation is divided up in America, how many agencies do you think is responsible for some aspect of transportation, for instance? Want to give it a shot?
612,
not bad. It's closer to, it's closer to 600, actually. So the reason why this is because of the way the American laws are written. And very often with legislation that is passed by Congress and agreed to by the president, what they do is organize the information according to existing agencies. So if agriculture has a long tradition of involving itself in one aspect of transportation, it will always have that aspect, even though logic or technology may dictate that it should migrate to another agency because of further improvements in the transportation purposes. And what I tell planning students on how to sort through all this, there are three sources. One is, how many of you ever heard of this? The U.S. government manual. Yes, our government does have a manual that explains what every agency is supposed to do, how it is funded, when it was legislated into existence, who's in charge of it. And in this particular case, this website is a responsibility of the GPO. Okay. If you're interested in following the money, GPO actually enables you to look through the budget of the United States to find out where the money might be spent. Now, keep in mind, this doesn't tell you how the money was spent. This only tells you what the president intends to do with the money. In our form of government, of course, the president has to work with who? What? Cynicism. I love it. If we follow our constitutional principles, the president must work with Congress. Congress determines what the budget shall be through its appropriations committees. None of that information will show up in this budget. The budget is only what the president requests. It does not reflect what the president got. So you ask, well, John, where can I find the information about the appropriations? GPO Access, Thomas, how many of you use Thomas? A few of you, okay. Thomas is the database for Congress itself, which gives a list, a way of searching the legislation both under consideration and that has been passed. But to save you, to cut to this chase, there really is no place in our U.S. government, believe it or not, that actually tells you where the money is going. Not a single place. In my experience, I've been a government information librarian since 1983. I've got it down to five different places that are somewhat reliable over time to give me some predictability about where the money is going. And I hedge on that even. And that is after some hours of work. But by the same token, there are a lot of librarians out there who are working on your behalf. And what they have done through with the cooperation of GPO is they've created guides to the government for you to use. And they break it down by these topics. So if you were to click on environment, there's a nameless librarian out there who has produced a guide on where to find information in the federal government about air pollution. And this is free of charge for you. Another way of overcoming that problem with Google of simply doing keyword search and organizing stuff in a knowledge-enhancing way. All right. Knowledge. Now, in my estimation, this is where you guys come in as planners. Everything about discovery and organization leads to your work, which is supposed to enhance both and produce knowledge on behalf of your clients, whoever those clients might be, right? Isn't that what you imagine you do every day? You're doing something useful every day, right? No? Tough crowd. What I have here is a couple of examples. One you should be definitely familiar with. How many of you visit this on a regular basis? All of you should be visiting it. This is actually planners trying to get together and saying, we got this universe of information dealing with planning. How can we use the web to organize it? So this is planners. This is planner world on the web, if you will. Sometimes boring, you know. I mean, not that you guys do it's boring, but, you know, when you talk about something that nobody else is interested in, you sometimes come across boring. But for planners, it's a great place. And what they do is they take all those sources of information we are talking about tonight, and they reconfigure it, mash it up, and deliver it up in such a way that other planners might find it useful. Another way you can use it is try to change the system. This is what I call the revolutionary arm of knowledge. And there are a couple of people that are attempting to take the technology and turn it back on to the government itself to open it up. And in this case, these are technical people that take the social software and try to give people a chance to give information back to the governors. So in this case, it's a combination of news gathering and then an opportunity to give them feedback. It is also, in some of these websites, they can enable you to take what the government produces and mash it up, if you will, into your own documents and purposes. Sort of a web 2.0 version of what the library guides are, but maybe on steroids. Another example of this is this one. And these people are a little bit more in your face about it. They are constantly at the government's doorsteps demanding that they open up their web as much as possible that would be freely available to the citizens. For instance, they're part of an organizing group that, is it Obama speaking tonight or is it tomorrow night? I can't remember. Tomorrow? They're going to open up a web page that will enable you through the social network to comment on what Obama is saying with each other and also to repackage your comments and send them to the legislators, the congressmen, and the president himself. And they've opened up a component of this where they've allowed people to do that not only through text messages but also YouTube facilities. So what I think the web has done in terms of this knowledge is that it has created the ability for the citizens to talk directly back to the government, and you no longer have the same mediation that maybe libraries had in previous centuries, but now the citizens can use the information technology and get back right into your face if you were a government or a public planner in new and significant ways. So as librarians, what we've learned is there's no more safety in our libraries in terms of being away from the public. There's no more safety behind a reference desk. We're constantly available, if you will. So with that, I will turn it over to Anna for her portion of the show, and I thank you very much for your patience.
What I'm going to do is just build on what John was talking about and talk a little bit more about the relationship that librarians can have with planners and how planners and librarians can work together. The APA Library has a history going back to about 1932, working with a bunch of municipal organizations and gathering federal and other levels of government information. In the past, we had an office in the Hyde Park area on the University of Chicago campus, and we had a joint reference library that was shared by about six organizations like the City Managers Association, Municipal Association, and Legislators Association. A predecessor organization to APA became a library supporter in 1938, and APA, as it is now, inherited the library in 1995. When that happened, about half of the collection went to our office just over here on the other side of the windows, and then half of that collection went to John's shop at UIC. So we sort of split up our resources, and APA maintained the most plannerly of the resources. Show of hands, have you looked at the APA Library website ever? Ah, good, okay. APA does have a library. And I will just take you quickly to our website. Just from the main page, if you look at, under the Resources tab, if you go to Library, we have made our collection, a catalog of it, publicly available, and anyone in the Chicago area or visitor can come by appointment and take a look at our collection. So from this website, if you click on the link on the left that says Catalog Search, you can access a database of all of our book holdings and our magazines, as well as a database of abstracts of our publications. So if you're looking for a planning magazine article or a zoning practice article, you should be able to find most of those things here. It's not a comprehensive database, but it does give adequate coverage, I think, of a lot of our publications. So you can search by title, keyword, any of the general fields that you would use in a normal catalog. I'm just going to choose sustainability. Okay. So you get a search return list, and if you're lucky, you might get a picture of the book cover. It's kind of a nice feature. One of the things I wanted to point out that if you see a record, that I'm going to just look at the APA Publications database to show what those records look like. Okay. So if in that main search list you see a record and it's got this strange little icon here, that's a sign that it's an article rather than a book. So you can just pull up and you can see, for example, in Planning Magazine in May of last year, we had an article by Timothy Beatley about sustainability topics. So that's one of our basic library resources. Let's take a look at the slide here. So we took a look at the publications abstracts database and just the books. We also have off of our library website and also off the APA main RSS page, we do have an RSS feed you can subscribe to that will show you all of the new acquisitions to the APA library. So when we get a new book or if we acquire a classic planning book, you can take a look and just have a constant reminder of what we're looking at. So that's a good resource as well. Something that's coming up later this year is we're developing a bibliographic web tool that will be off of our website. It's a grant-funded project from the American Library Association where we want to collect and categorize key planning books, gray literature, and websites. So it'll be like the planners, like a subset of Google for planners. We've taken the time to annotate and categorize some websites and that sort of thing. So that'll be coming up hopefully, I would say, around June. And then I wanted to just spend some time talking about some models for how planning information is made available online, not just through Google and not through our library catalogs, but some of these other resources are available. So I'm just going to pull up a few of those. One of them is MuniCode. Have people looked at MuniCode before? No. It's like a couple of other websites. American Legal is one. It's a code aggregator that takes municipal codes from different cities around the country and puts them all in a database. And they do have some free search functions on this website. So if you click on MuniCode Library and then go to a state that you're interested in, we'll look at Illinois, it will pull up a list of municipalities whose codes they have aggregated. I was looking at Palos Hills earlier. So it, of course, will offer you the opportunity to buy them, but you can just search them without purchasing them. So it pulls up the whole municipal code. You can see the zoning code in there, but you can do a search through the search box for anything that interests you. Say if you are looking to build a swimming pool, you could just type in swimming pool and it will pull up the relevant chapters of the code in the building code and then the zoning code also. Another resource is this website from Portland State University. It's interesting because it's a partnership between Portland State University, Metro, TriMet, and the Oregon Historical Society, where they've taken relevant reports, historical reports as well as current reports, born digital information, and they've accumulated it in an online library that is searchable. So if you go under digital repository and then browse collections, it's probably the easiest thing to take a look at here. You'll see all kinds of gray literature. And when I say that, what I mean is things that usually don't end up published with an ISBN number, like a regular book, things like staff reports from your agency or white papers, that kind of thing. And they have a really nice list here of topics, like environment, and it pulls up different things. I'm just going to look at this newsletter. And so it's fully digitized, all of this information. And you get some screenshots, and you can access it. This is, of course, regional, just for the Portland area. But I think it represents a good possibility for partnerships that planning agencies, metropolitan regional planning agencies, and universities can undertake to aggregate planning information and make it available for you as planners, but also just for citizens. Another example from the Pacific Northwest is the Municipal Research and Services Center of Washington State. And this is an agency that serves municipalities in Washington only. They have a reference service that folks can access. They aggregate a lot of policy documents and really have a good search interface that lets you look at, if you're just doing some comparative research and you want to see what, you know, a town is doing related to a planning issue under subjects, they have a good list here. Planning. And then you can just take a look at various areas. So again, this is where librarians are doing some of that categorizing work for you and putting out information that I think Google is not really going to find, and we put it together in a good package where you can find things about specifically about climate change in municipal areas. And there are some other good subject collections inside here. So this is one example that I wanted to point out. And then the last example that I wanted to show is from the Hillsborough County, Florida Planning Commission. They have a library which has been integrated into the countywide library system of that county in Florida. So if you're a citizen, you can, with your library card, go to the Planning Commission library, check out documents, you interlibrary loan them, and they have made some different things available from their Citizens Resource Center. They have a link to census data, some things about parking. And when I was looking at this website earlier, I just noticed their history page, where they've taken historical maps and zoning documents and again, digitize them so that people who are doing research about that particular area can find them. This is similar a little bit to the Portland, Oregon Sustainable Library. So again, this from Florida, so a different geographic example, but another model of how planning agencies are making more information available to the public, and then if you're doing research on your own topics, you can access this and kind of get a good comparative vision. So let me just make sure I'm not forgetting anything while I'm on this slide. So with that idea in mind of some different examples of how planners and librarians can put information together, and other agencies have done that, I want to talk for a second just about the public library in your area. Prior to coming to APA, I was a reference librarian at a public library. So I think there are some resources that you might not consider when you're doing your professional work that it could be of value. So libraries, of course, have reference services. If you're a resident in an area, go talk to your friendly reference librarian. They are at a reference desk still, but they do some different things. Your public library also will offer access to databases that you might not access through your work, or if you're no longer a student, through your university. They will purchase access to things like, you know, the Chicago Tribune, historical archives. SAGE has a publication, any of the planning journals and this sort of thing. You can access probably through your public library if you can't get it through work or through any other kinds of memberships you have. I'm going to let John chime in here when I'm finished if he wants to mention a little bit about the Federal Depository Library Program, whereby the U.S. government makes government information available at certain facilities in your area. So, for example, in Chicago, the Sulzer Regional Library on the northwest side maintains some of the print collection of government resources. And then there are a variety of specialized collections. We're lucky in Chicago. There are a lot of planning-like topic collections, like at Northwestern, there's a transportation library. And then even in the smallest municipality, your public library usually has a collection of your ordinances. Where I worked, they were still paper and binders, taking up several shelves. But if you're looking for historical data or just you need a go-to place and you can't find your office copy, I would think about the public library as a place where you want to make sure there's planning information and you can use it if you need to. Ways that planners and librarians can work together. If they don't already exist, I would think about creating user-friendly guides to zoning ordinances or processes. I would usually get questions at the library about, well, what's the zoning ordinance here about why can't I, you know, why does my fence have to be this high, or why can't I put a garage here? And they usually want to see the relevant section of code. I think a partnership could be really fruitful in this area if planners and librarians can come up with good ways to help people get this kind of information. And then in the digital age, we can start thinking about creating online portals to citizen information, kind of like what I was looking at the Hillsborough County facility or other libraries, other planning agencies that have done some work to make everything available online. So just a little food for thought, and then always you can ask a librarian, me, for example. If you would like to use the APA library, you're welcome to do that. Just give me a call or send me an email, and we can set up an appointment. And with that, I will turn it back over to John, and we'll kind of tag team on questions if there are any.
The depository libraries that Brenna was referring to was actually a century-old tradition or a century-old program that has been operated by the Government Printing Office since 1895. And by the rules and regulations of that program, it is required to put a federal library in every congressional district. And within Chicago, there's about 25 of them because of the number of congressional districts we have in Chicago. And what these libraries usually collect are all the major legislative and executive documents you could be possibly interested in. For instance, the University of Illinois at Chicago has been a depository since the mid-1960s. Northwestern and University of Chicago have been far longer federal depositories, going back to the early parts of the 20th century and late 19th century. And very often there are trained reference librarians who refer to themselves as I am still called, even though my chief function now is urban planning bibliographer, is a government information librarian. And what my research has shown over the last 10 or 12 years is that increasingly, with e-government services now being promoted by all levels of government, people do not know where to go to for information, as Rana was just describing in this possible partnership between planners and librarians. The Medicare Part B, or Medicare Part D, I suppose is what it's now, caused a great deal of consternation amongst the retired crowd, because the forms and descriptions for that new Medicare program were not very helpful. So they were told to go to their library. And what happened is that librarians did not claim an expertise, but they became very familiar with the questions that were asked and how to respond. And so too with taxes. When the tax time rolls around, many people go to the libraries to find the proper tax forms and so on. And as part of this, about 25 institutions around the country have done is they have created what could be called a national reference desk that you can use. And it is at this website, govinfo.org, and that's with a T. And you don't need the www. And what you can do is either chat during these hours or send them an email. And the number of the participating libraries are a combination of state libraries, public libraries, and academic institutions, all of which are part of this federal depository library system. So one of the things that librarians are doing is that we're moving to the web. We're offering people chances to talk to us, ask them questions, regardless of where they are. My duty on this is tomorrow night, and I get questions from all over the states. One time I actually got a question from a soldier in Iraq who was working with the JAG, the Judge Advocate General, and he had a question about a particular law. He didn't have access to the resources. He saw this on the web. He put it to me. I connected him to where he should go. End of story. This is what the web is doing to us. It's reducing the geography, as you well know, but it's also creating an infinite number of possibilities of connections and making not only what you do as planners easier for the citizens to understand, but also in terms of partnering with other traditional services that reach out to citizens in some way. So with that, we're going to wrap it up, and we're going to stand here in front of you and let you ask questions if you want to ask us questions.
Thanks, John. Hold on. I just want to remind everyone, I'll come around with the microphone so we can record your questions. Thanks, John and Rana.
Actually, I have two questions. Can we have access to that PowerPoint?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, and I don't know if you or her talk about this, but among all the resources, is there any resource to have access to GIS layers?
Not on the APA website. I'm not sure if there certainly are GIS layers on federal government websites. I'm not sure if how easy it is. John, Rana, have either of you searched for GIS layers using the USA.gov or some other?
Yes. Okay. And it's not easy. The census does have the geo layers, but again, as I said earlier about the federal government and that who divides up the GIS responsibilities, that is scattered across several agencies. And there is a clearinghouse of GIS information that you can be pointed to, but what you do with it is sort of, they just tell you, here it is. We assume you know what you're looking for, and once you find it, we assume you know what you want to do with it. And our only responsibility is to allow you to download it. Now, of course, the city of Chicago has its own GIS capabilities. Other cities are growing in their GIS capabilities, and what I've discovered in my practice is that some localities, some governments are beginning to set themselves saying, we don't want to just give it to you. We want to help you massage it. So they're putting up information products beforehand saying, for instance, taking various census data and saying, click on this map. You could take this layer off, put this layer on, doing that kind of thing. So there, it's a variety of experience, but it's, like I said before, it's not a one-stop experience. But yes, they're out there. You can send it to these folks, and they could probably help you as an email question if you're looking for a particular area.
Other questions?
Oh, my question was very similar, and I was actually expecting more of this is where you can find things that can be very applicable, and you know this was, but I was expecting more like, you know, the very, you know, GIS and you know this is how to make a map so I can impress the presentation that I need to make kind of thing.
That would be another 2 hours to do it adequately. Okay, but I mean, we're not ready for GIS because that's an entirely different program. But we really have to set up the layers and the connections that we weren't prepared to go at this level. Okay, so we were prepared to give you not a treetop view, if you will, which GIS would reflect, but more standing on the mountain looking at the forest.
Any other questions or comments? Well, if not, I want to thank you all for coming out tonight. Let's have another round of applause for John and Rana.
Thank you.
And I want to invite you all back for our next program on February 23rd, when Joseph Schwederman from DePaul will be here to talk about his new book, Beyond Burnham. On behalf of the American Planning Association, I want to thank John Schuler and Rana Salzman for a thought-provoking and informative program on data mining. Thanks also to the many APA staff members who help make this program possible every month. Information on previous and future presentations is available on APA's website, www.planning.org, under the section called Events. I'm David Morley.